podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's the weekend and we're all happy and cheery because Liverpool are great again. Well, perhaps they certainly won a game. I am John Gibbons, if I didn't say that already, and I'm joined by Amelia Bonner, by Carl Kopak, and by Mike Kearney, and we've got an action-packed show because it's going to be a long weekend. Liverpool don't play till Monday. We've given you absolutely loads of content for you to get stuck into across your weekend, wherever you are. So coming up, I speak to Matt Parrish, new CEO of LFC Foundation, about his new role and also reflecting on the work they've done over the last 12 months during the COVID crisis. Then I spoke to my close personal friend, Craig Parkinson, who about his podcast and also looking ahead to a new podcast he's doing on Line of Duty. Then Lizzie Doyle spoke to Amelia Bonner's close personal friend, Jackie Oatley, about Wolves, looking ahead to the Wolves game and see what she thinks about that. And then we'll be back in amongst all these lovely people to talk about Wolves as well. So loads and loads to get stuck into. But first of all, Amelia Bonner, Liverpool won a game, hurrah.
Brilliant, isn't it? I was slightly scared that we may never do so again. But how foolish of me to believe that. It was obviously always going to be absolutely fine, and God, did we need it. And it felt like, looking at them after each goal and also at the end, that they really, really needed that too. And yeah. I know it's an obvious point, but I just can't imagine that sense of relief for them as a squad, and also to just kind of know that we'll all chill out a little bit now. I imagine that...
Speak for yourself.
Well, you're going to be on their case following the bus. No, it was just lovely to be reminded of what Liverpool do and how they do it and how brilliantly they do it and how effortless it can actually look. Everything has felt like a lot of effort for quite a while now, and it just felt very easy, and there were players in positions that felt right and good, and it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, Carl? Because I went from thinking, will we win another game this season, to going 6-1 in the Champions League. Pretty good. Yeah, it could all change so quickly.
We recalibrate more than any other fan base in the world. I'm already thinking about the Super Cup. I'm planning way ahead.
I'm not we might be able to go to that.
I know exactly whenever that's going to be. Yeah, because there's a stage in the second half where I thought 0-0. At least it's not a home defeat, even though we're 1,000 miles away. But it's not, and it puts us through, but it's still not ideal. And then, to be honest, when Salah scored, I genuinely thought, oh, that's gone in. You know, no, it didn't celebrate.
That's what it looks like.
I forgot what that feels like. Yeah, I'm looking at the official score. Well, he's going to find something with that. And then it was a little bit frustrating when we scored the second one, because I thought, oh, we've got the hang of this now, have we? Now, where have you been for the last six games? But, no, it's really weird about how our best games have been in Europe, and we played a lot freer. It's like we'd forgotten our form, and then suddenly Fabinho back in midfield, which I imagine we're going to talk about, that just put everything... Oh, yeah, we do this, don't we? I remember this bit. Yeah, this was good. So that was really, really good.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, Mike? You know, Carl's talking there about sort of, you know, recalibrating yourselves based on one win. And listen, 11 o'clock last night, after a few beers, I was up for moving the whole club to Budapest, to be honest with you, and including us. I think you'd smash it in Budapest, mate. They'd love you.
You know what I mean? The most Salah fan club's got its main attraction coming over to Budapest in about 6 weeks, whenever the quarters are.
Your close personal friend.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll leave it for others to say, Carl, you know what I mean? it just felt so... Do you know what I thought as well, though, is there was something to lose last night. We've sort of known that the league's not been on for a while now, haven't we? And look, Brighton are home, Burnley are home, Fulham are home. Games you shouldn't be losing. Games was the reasons why we're not going to be winning the league this year. But amongst all the disappointment that we've had, you've always thought, well, all right, top four might be there. You know, the Premier League's not there, but then even when you probably were outsiders for top four, it almost felt to me last night that there was something physical, like you can actually lose a chance at winning this trophy, which was making me a bit more nervous than what we should have been, because we were 2-0 up, weren't we? And look, that was in the middle of all this losing. The fact that we've actually gone and beat a very good team 2-0 in what's supposed to be the away leg. But you know, it was actually our new home ground, so you know, Leipzig must feel hard done by there. They've played us home twice. It was just good, and the fact that we got through to half time 0-0, we were creating loads of chances, and we didn't look terrible, which was which is largely down to the fact that I think the players have sort of, I don't know, they just, it's not the Premier League, so it might have changed the mindset a bit, and the fact that there was something there to lose should sort of sharpen the focus a bit. And I think we were brilliant, to be honest, and we can get better, and hopefully will now with that team that I personally would be starting from here on in. It was really solid. I think the balance is what we've been missing for ages, and I've been boring myself to death saying Thiago.
How do we should, feel, lad?
Well, I've been boring myself and anyone who will listen about Thiago playing in the midfield that he was bought for. And last night, you know, Fabinho, where he is, makes the whole balance of the team so much better. Not just Thiago, but like the fullbacks as well. Trent, another good game because he's got Pep Linders calls him the lighthouse, doesn't he? And he was back where he belonged last night.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it, Amelia? Because I was really excited when Fabinho was back in midfield. I was really pleased with the team selection, but I didn't expect it to solve literally everything. Yeah. But there it did.
It absolutely did. It was a complete cure-all, which is mad because every time we've been talking about when players may or may not come back, there's a part of you going, yeah, but look, you know, there's so much more. There are so many more injuries than that. There's so much more at the moment going on. You know, that's not going to be a quick fix. And then it was. It just absolutely was. It was brilliant. It just changed everything, didn't it? And it's mad because Fabinho has been so good as a centre-back that you're almost surprised that when he plays in the position that he's meant to play in, it makes that much of a difference because he did such a good job kind of plastering over the cracks. But it wasn't just Thiago. Like, Genie was brilliant. He was kind of more able to break forward and they all looked like they felt a bit freer and more confident and like they could all kind of breathe out and go, right, okay, let's play football like we normally do then. Like they weren't as worried about having to kind of keep everything, having to work with a very different lineup every single time, having a different centre-back partnership so often, and it just felt like they were all able to kind of breathe out and go, right, this is a bit normal now.
Yeah, it's a bit like yourself, Carl, when you're on a show. Just bring out the best in everyone else, you know what I mean? Not just your own excellence, but everyone else sort of raises their game too. And it was funny, I read, if anyone's not read it yet, Jonathan Luce, I mean, he's the best football writer in the Nationals anyway, but his Guardian piece is fantastic. And he makes a point that we were all waiting to see what the centre-half partnership was going to be like, and we're still not sure because Fabinho just stopped anything getting anywhere near them. And it was that. He helped the centre-halves, he helped the full-backs. I agree with Mike on that. Completely agree with Amelia that he helped the midfielders who was alongside, and even the forwards seemed to perk up as well. I mean, that's not bad, is it, for one fella?
I think, as Amelia said, solved in 10 seconds the second he walks on the pitch. Yeah, it's like he's cured the world's ills in one go. It's just the quality of the man, really. Klopp said after the game that, you know, is he going to play number six? He's had, look, he's the best number six in the world. And I love the fact he said that. Not, oh, yeah, you know, he's great. It's good to have him back and we'll see what he's going to do against Wolves if we can block. No, he's the best number six in the world. And that's where he's going to play. And the centre-backs were really good. They were really, really good. And it doesn't half help if you've got your mate standing in front of you, don't you? Just sort of glaring everyone down. And I also love his runs forward as well because it doesn't look like he's running. He just sort of just ambles along and everyone just goes into position. And just imagine that coming towards you. It's just, you know, this could go anywhere. He's an astonishing footballer. He really is. And I've missed him, but I didn't realise how much I'd missed him.
Yeah.
Until last night.
It's funny because they were waxing lyrical on the telly, and I think it was, I don't know who it was who described him as like a warm hug almost in there with Fabinho, and that's what it's sort of the ex-pros, you know, talking about it like that, Mike, and that's what it felt like, and that's what it felt like to the whole team, and certainly to us, and I'm with you, let's keep him there forever now. He's got to play there till he's 50.
Yeah.
At least.
I mean, let's keep him forever, to be fair, because he's just, it feels like it was the most obvious thing to do, doesn't it? And
yeah,
I can sort of understand and appreciate why Klopp thought, you know what, we've got a massive injury there, Van Dijk. So naturally, the best solution we had was Fabinho at the time. But that was when we had other midfielders that were still, you know, actual walking rounds on two legs. We've got Henderson out at the minute, who's another massive miss. And, you know, you could even argue if and when Henderson does come back, nothing against Nat Phillips at all, by the way. I think he was fantastic last night. But you could argue that if we're going to move any midfielder back to midfield now, centre half in future, it could and probably should be Henderson, and leave Fabinho where it is. Just on just on the balance. Like, I can't get over how much balance we were. That's the main thing I took away, is he was intercepting the balls before the centre halves. He was taking it off them when, you know, when they had the ball. He was, you know, he was just flawless. And he's gone up a level since we bought him, to be honest. And I remember was it last season or the season before when he gets injured against Napoli, and I think it was last season, weren't it? Because Henderson then steps into number six and is fantastic. And it's like, well, of course we've got the best number six in the world, but then we've got Jordan Henderson stepping in from number eight, from where he was playing, while he had the best number six in the world next to him, dropping back and doing an even, you know, just a fantastic job himself. So we've always sort of felt spoiled for that situation, in that position. He's not played there though, Fabinho, since the derby, 17th of October. Like, that's a long time to be playing centre half, and, you know, had his own little injury, didn't he? So
it's that long ago. The pubs were open, then shut again, then opened again, and now shut again.
Yeah, I mean,
but that was the first, that derby's the when things started to fall apart, and think of how totally they felt like they fell apart between now and then, and now they're starting to kind of come back again. It's such a long time, even though it's not that long at all.
Absolutely. I mean, what is time anymore? anyway, let's talk about the centre-halves a little bit. We've touched on it, and I'll go to you, Amelia, first. I thought both of them did well. I thought Quebec was quietly good, and Nat Phillips was loudly good.
Yeah, that's a brilliant description. Yeah, that's exactly it. The swim cap didn't stop being distracting at any point. But I don't know if it just gave him more power. He was absolutely brilliant. And I think, obviously, when Van Dijk comes back and when Gomez comes back, you kind of worry, because Nat Phillips has been brilliant, and I don't know what his role is then. And kind of that was his European debut, wasn't it? That's the first time he's played for us in, yeah. Like, and bloody hell, how brilliant he was. And I think that's the centre-back partnership that I'd like us to stick with. I think I read last night that that's the eighth centre-back partnership in eight games in Europe so far this season, so which is fucking mental. Mm. But that's the one I'd stick with, because it felt quite good, and it's the best I've seen of Quebec, and which is mad, because you think of how many, in the short time he's been with the club, how many different centre-back partners he's had to have. But it just felt a bit kind of calmer and more confident and more assured. And I'm sure a lot of that, again, comes back to what we said about Fabinho being back. But they were both brilliant in different ways, and I'd like to see more of that, please.
Yeah, more of that and more of the same. And just on Nat Phillips in particular, Carl, I think I've said it on a couple of shows, but I think it's worth sort of repeating, in that he's just unruffled and nothing seems to faze him. And, you know, he's been in and out the team at different times. And, you know, it feels like Jürgen's played everyone, you know, to avoid playing him at times. But he just comes in, and now, you know, on his CV, he's got, you know, a clean sheet and a win in a Champions League knockout game. And that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, you take that as well. He's had a bit of a year, isn't he? I was thinking last night just how mad it would be if someone had sat us down in a room on the morning of the Goodison Derby and said, we're happy with Nat Phillips and Quebec to go into the last eight of the Champions League. I mean, that's just how mad this year's been. That's just
first question, who's Quebec?
Yeah. Second question, what? Yeah, we've got to go through 15 centre-backs before we get in. No problem. Yeah. Just watch this. I thought he was really, really good. It's I don't think Leipzig were particularly great, but that's a side, you know, that's a really good side. And I thought when Kluivert came on, he was good as well. He was really, really, really noisy around the box and things. And I love this block. I love Phillips's block, because it's just a sort of, it might look like a sort of like meet and drink block or anything like that, but I just love the fact he was there. And like, he had the sort of the maturity to do that. And he's playing in the last 16 of the Champions League. I just thought he was incredible, really, really good. And you said, you know, Emilio was saying, you know, what's his role in the side? It's to head everything. Absolutely. Yeah. If you need a door opening, don't bother with the handle. If he's behind you, on you go, son. It's all yours, regardless of height. Absolutely incredible. He's fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny, mate. When I took Ted to nurse you this morning, when I opened the door and went outside, I just expected Nat Phillips just to be heading stuff on the field in front of me. Do you know what I mean? It was just, he just, yeah, what a fella.
I am concerned, though, that NASA will come and sign him off us so he can head asteroids away for his children. You know, this season is absolutely wild, and we haven't lost a centre-half like that yet, so let's wait and see. Let's hope they don't. Because But to be fair to him, though, and we're not. By no way is anyone trying to do him down by saying he's a fantastic header of the ball. He's actually all right with his feet, isn't he? He's 23, which makes you think for a centre half, that's sort of now getting to like 23 to 29 is probably peak years for centre halves. But he's still quite inexperienced. You know, he was on loan at Stuttgart, wasn't he, the other year in the second tier of Germany. Then gets dropped back in, just parachuted in for the Derby FA Cup game, which like is mental in itself that he just plays that one game and then goes back on loan to Stuttgart, keeps the clean sheet and gets off. Like, just so he's like, I think Jürgen's now going, you know what? Not that I've never trusted him, but look at him every time I've threw him in, he's bomb proof. Like he wins a lot of headers against big teams. West Ham, his game against West Ham this season, I think, is it his first game he comes in this season? The Anfield game, he does this mad boss header at the end of the game. And I was watching it last day, and he said, like, I know our centre half's a boss, and you like Van Dijk, obviously, we all know it. He said, but when is it you see someone like run out, like proper throw the red at it, like tense the neck muscles and everything, and go bang and get out? It's like, it's just good, it's old fashioned centre half, it's good to see. And I'd be keeping him because he's proved his worth to us. In a time of crisis in that position. And like RB Leipzig, they're high up in the German in the Bundesliga at the minute, like going for it with Dortmund and Munich. They're not a bad team, and we beat them 4-0 over two legs, which sort of might point back to what I was saying before about the freedom of going into the Champions League, where it's on the line and it's, you know, it's not, it is actually, you've got to win here. Because let's be honest, if they'd got the first goal last night with the form we've been in, it would have been panic stations for a lot of the fans watching, and you know, maybe some of the players. But you know, last night we were calm and composed all the way from the start. Obviously, you know, we've already spoke about Fabinho, but there's them two centre halves for me, and the goalie behind them as well makes an important save.
Yeah, good shout. Yeah, early on, yeah.
Really good save early on. And you know, Kabach and Alisson had a bit of a misunderstanding against Leicester. They've had a couple more games now. I just think leave that as it is now. And poor Ben Davis there might have to stay on the bench for the rest of his life. But you're not getting in front of Nat Phillips, mate.
So can I say, I think it's really interesting when people say you can't have Nat Phillips because he's only been playing Championship level football, and you know that's not good enough to play for Liverpool. Joe Gomez, anyone? But bought his left back from Charlton, and like you know, and he's we can't wait till he comes back. So you know that doesn't mean anything. So I think. I definitely keep him, but he's something to work on, definitely.
I've got a Nat Phillips theory with Jürgen Klopp, but it's a bit deep. So basically, Jürgen Klopp said a couple of times, he's basically said, oh, Nat Phillips was, he's a bit like me when I was playing, do you know what I mean? He was limited and stuff. And I think that he's held him back because Jürgen didn't completely believe in himself as a player. And I think he thinks, well, I wasn't good enough. I wouldn't have been good enough for Liverpool. So this other guy, who even looks a bit like me with his beard and stuff and plays a bit like me, and he's a bit of a yard dog, but he just tries dead hard, you know. I think it's a bit cats in the cradle, to be honest with you.
I know. All over body shivers as it's cracked it.
But what happens at the end of the film is, Amelia, is Nat Phillips scores a goal in the Champions League final, and Jürgen Klopp realises that maybe he could have been that guy after all if he'd just believed in himself, and he feels bad that he's held Nat Phillips back based on his own insecurities, and now he lets him go and he wins Ballon d'Or.
And Michel Virgil van Dijk.
could I pitch that to anyone?
I'm watching that film. That film. It's the last shot, Jürgen looking out over the sea with a little glint in his eye,
realizing that it wasn't about Nat. It was about me.
It's a lesson, isn't it? It's a life lesson. Yeah.
There's a montage sequence of Nat Phillips just doing neck day every day in the gym, lifting shit, lugging shit around, using his neck to like some sort of inspirational music.
Pulling lorries.
Pulling lorries.
If anyone at Universal is listening, any of the big film producers, I'll sign with anyone. Me, do let me know. Fox, I don't know who the other, Disney. They've got a bit of dough, haven't they? I'm fine to add the Star Wars element if you want. Let me know. And on that note, we're going to go in and talk about some other things. So we got me with Matt from LFC Found. Foundation. We've got myself, with Craig Parkinson about his podcast and what's going on with him. And then we've got Lizzie Doyle with Jackie Oatley looking ahead to Wolves. And then we're going to be back looking ahead to Wolves as well. Have fun. We'll see you in a bit.
And I am now joined by Matt Parrish from the LFC Foundation. Now, CEO of the LFC Foundation. I don't know whether I should bow, Matt or Kit.
Well, I've got the working class syndrome, right? So I'm not saying it's imposter syndrome, and I won't admit that. But yeah, no, it's great. I'm really sort of honoured to get it, and it's been I think it's mainly about sort of leveling this up with other football club foundations, where the head of or the director of is the CEO, and ultimately is a separate legal entity, a charity in its own right. So it's great. I'm really, really honoured and privileged to get the opportunity here.
No, fantastic stuff, and well deserved, of course, for all your hard work and leadership. And I want to talk a little bit about that sort of, hard work collectively that the foundation have done over the last year, because, there's a lot of us reflecting over the last 12 months at the moment. It's 12 months as supporters since we've been in a stadium properly all together, watching Liverpool, and obviously for a 12-month period where, we've had to alter our lives, and you guys have had to alter what you do, how you do it, and I guess, the focus of who you help as well. So I know you've been reflecting on that. So how's that been, and how have you sort of reflected on everything you've achieved, really, and everything you've had to do?
Yeah, I think I saw a colleague, we released the sort of figures of the amount of people we've been able to support over the last 12 months, and I saw a colleague on social media where she said that, sad that we've had to do it, but this is what we've done, type of thing. And I think that's the general theme. I don't feel as though we're sort of necessarily celebrating it, but what we're trying to do is say thank you, because ultimately it's been a real collective effort. So that's ourselves in terms of Foundation Red Neighbours. It's sort of, that's what we do. It's probably quite akin to what our day job is. But we've had support from so many departments of the football club, but also from the community, from fans, from club partners. And without that, it wouldn't have stacked up. And I think it's been about us trying to do what we do anyway, but just having to do it slightly differently. And I'm glad now that we tried to focus on areas where we thought we could help the most. Because we could have fallen into the trap, because there'd been so much need of trying to be all things to all people and end up doing several things okay, where what we try to do is do a few things really well. And I like to think that we can. I think while it's not celebrating, I feel we can, as a football club, and I mean that as a club and as including the fans, I think we can feel hopefully quite proud of what we've done to support our communities in this time.
No, absolutely. And I'll read out some of the numbers, so we'll focus on the three areas individually. So first of all, well-being. We have supported the physical and mental health of communities by delivering 800 virtual fitness sessions, created online grassroots sports programs for 7,000 children, and supported 69 local schools, helping teachers and children to stay alive. I've seen some of those virtual fitness sessions, mate, and I know some of the people who've been involved in them, and they've been great. I know the feedback I've had from people who do yoga sessions and things like that have been obviously not just the activity itself, but the community, the collective kind of spirit around it, and keeping in touch with people sort of as much as anything. I know, as I say, not quite firsthand, but secondhand, how much people have appreciated it.
No, we've had some really good feedback, and I think one of the things that out of the three areas is probably the one that it's probably more akin to what we do day in, day out, so delivery of programs, but to getting that offer available virtually was our biggest challenge, because we didn't expect to have to do it. So I think it's fair to say that our offer in comparison with the lockdown three, which we're in now, and the first lockdown, is like night and day, far more refined. But we got going pretty quickly, and probably by the back end of week two of this current lockdown, we were up to 70 different virtual sessions a week, ranging from mini kicks, so junior kids football, right up to chair-based yoga, as you say, for the older group. So it's a real range. And I think that one of our biggest learnings is that some of that will stay, so that nothing can replace face-to-face delivery. But ultimately, things like the share-based show was a great example. The Red Neighbours team would deliver one of those a week face-to-face in the pre-COVID. Now they're up to three virtual sessions a week. So as that evolves and face-to-face comes back, it might be one of each, one and two, whatever. But the point is that virtual offer will stay. And I think for some of our more vulnerable groups, maybe disability sports sessions, again, that face-to-face sport activity is so key, so vital for physical and mental health. But I think if what the virtual offer is almost a light introduction. So if someone's unsure about coming, perhaps doing that first, I think that's been a learning for us. Some of the feedback's been brilliant. And John, if I bored you with this analogy already, apologies, but there's one that really sticks in my mind because it hit home. One dad, he contacted us and said, I'm a normal dad, normal kid, normal family, but I felt like I'd lost my lad. He was stuck on the TV playing on his console. I couldn't get him off the TV. He was, I was worried, he was depressed, blah, blah, missing his mates, missing his footy, missing going to the footy. Started coming to your virtual football activity and I've got my son back. And that to me, that's a normal kid. That's your son, my son, our cousin, our brother. That's Matt, and there's so many little, it's not a little story, but there's so many lots of little positive stories like that. And I think that's why we're so pleased with the work we've been able to do.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And the next area is social isolation, and you guys have made 1,400 calls, totaling 400 hours of chats within the community. And that's something I think about a lot, Matt, is that, we've all had it tough over the last year. It's been difficult for all of us, but I've got my wife, I've got my little boy, and I've got that, sort of support network around me and company for one, for not to use it to sort of, stronger way there. People don't have that, and a lot of people don't have that, and it's those people who I feel most sorry for during this, and it's those people who we've had to, and we need to look after more than anyone else, I guess, during this time.
Yeah, and I think it was straight away, again, the Red Neighbours team have got a long-standing connection with sort of perhaps isolated groups in the community, but obviously that, and they would run activities for those groups, but with that going, it's about, right, how can we stay connected? I think, to use that term that we all feel better when we know someone's got us in mind. I think when that someone that's got you in mind is your football club, that can have even a bigger impact. So for some people that the LFC Connect programme has been contacting, that might be their only conversation that day or that week even. So it's huge. And it's fallen into two camps, really. It's been the real targeted piece for isolated members of the community who have come forward and asked or been signposted to us. And it's been for our participants. So lots of calls to participant groups like the Walking Football Group, like the Disability Sports Group, like some of their young people that come on mental health programmes. So again, that connection. Because as you say, for some people in that community, there would have been real profound isolation and loneliness. And that's challenging. It's been tough for us all, isn't it, this period. But again, at least if you've got that contact, at least it lightens some of that impact. I do apologise as well, John. I don't know if you're picking it up, but my dog has decided to bark downstairs consistently. So apologies, she's joining in.
It's all right. It's part of all this, isn't it? We're all trying our best.
One of the joys of working from home.
We're all trying our best in different situations. The last area is food poverty, and you guys have raised £320,000 to help people struggling to feed themselves. And prepared, cooked, and delivered 52,000 fresh meals to families and collected over 15 tons of food to help feed local people. Those numbers are high. That is a lot. It's sad that it's necessary, but it is. And what I've noticed more, Martin, and you'll obviously, be able to talk about this more, is that there seems to be, greater joining up between different groups, both in North Liverpool, to help sort of provide these services. So I know you guys would be first to sort of say that those numbers aren't achieved without, organisations like Find Support Food Banks, without the food banks sort of in the area, and other organisations who are able to identify a need, who are able to help get these things out there. And that seems to be something that has increased over the year, this kind of co-working, if you like, on this area.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think you had Forbes on one of the shows a week or so ago, and I think Forbes and Red Neighbours team and the club have had that long-standing relationship with both Fan Supported Food Banks and the North Liverpool, St Andrews Network, the North Liverpool Food Bank. So again, it was about us. It's one of the things I'm personally most proud of, but almost most humbled by, because what we've basically done is mobilised, and we've got donations, be that from hospitality members of the club who, back in the last season, instead of spending that money, they donated it. Fans who have bought tickets for Legends game, I know we came on and we talked about it after that mm-hmm. happened. The Norway OLSC, raising well over 80k on their own. And let's not forget, it's a global pandemic, so they're not, it hasn't not impacted there as well. But yeah, and it's because of experts, because of volunteers, experts that are already doing it locally. St Andrews Network, all the other food banks in the Trussell Trust network across the Liverpool City region and fan support food banks and the work they really do, we're able to donate. We're not running food banks, but we're hopefully a conduit to help fund them. So and I think they've, the community spirit, if there are any positives to come out of this horrible period of time, then that, I think that's been it. I think, you know, I've been in Liverpool for 4 or 5 years now. I've worked for the foundation for 2. I think there is a massive community spirit in this city anyway, isn't there? But it really feels like people have stepped up. I can guarantee if you ever meet with people running a food bank, one of the first things they'll say is they don't want to be in operation.
Yeah.
So sad that they are, but they've been so needed in this time. And I think that the need for food and has gone up. Food poverty, I think, is probably sadly only going to get worse over the next few months. So being able to support in that area, fan support on a match day anyway, and be able to sort of partly bridge that gap, I think being able to support and set up a further community pantries through that fundraising has been massive. But it is, again, without, hopefully it doesn't sound too cheesy, but it's genuinely about saying thanks to the fans that have donated, because that's enabled us to then give that money straight to the food bank. So yeah, it's been amazing. And then I think the chefs at Anfield, I think Heather might correct me if I'm wrong, but that figure goes up 1,000 every week. So when those figures were done, it's probably up to 54,000 now. But that again, and that's about partnership. So the chefs are creating the meals, and then those go out via community groups in mainly North Liverpool and Kirby, but you know, there's some spatters across the whole of the region. So you know, again, that's a partnership project really. And without that partnership, the food wouldn't go out to the community. So it's so important, those connections.
You sort of hinted at it just later in your answer there, Matt, that, you know, this is, in some ways, you know, it's not going away anytime soon, and it might even get worse in certain areas. And we have a government roadmap out of this now, and we've all got our eye on certain dates, you know, when things are going to reopen and things are going to get back to normal, in inverted commas. But the repercussions of the year are going to be long-standing, aren't they? And Liverpool Football Club and the foundation will, I'm sure, be aware of that, and I'm sure we'll be aware that, you know, these, as I say, greater sort of partnerships and things like that will be needed, you know, more so than ever over the last year. And it's up to all of us to kind of, you know, to remember, as you say, that the even greater community spirit, you know, in Liverpool, you know, over the next 12 months, you know, just because, you know, our lives might go back to normal, it doesn't mean everyone's going to.
No, and I think our commitment as a foundation, as a club, you know, our commitment to supporting food poverty, it's not going to change. As a foundation, we're committed to expanding our work in terms of employability support, expanding our work in terms of mental health support, and probably one of the things that comes most naturally to us is physical activity and social sessions for people to get re-engaged. You know, we're all thirsting for that. Pardon the pun. Obviously, I've got one eye on when I'm allowed to have a pint in a beer garden somewhere, 12th of April. But the wider piece of, you know, people being able to come together, being able to take part in physical activity again. That's so good for people, as we know, for all of us, for our mental health, so getting that going. But the club, that commitment, I think, our commitment as a club to say food poverty has strengthened during this time, and that is certainly not going to go away. I think it's important that we stay focused, and it's a great point, you know, as life returns to normal, in inverted commas, for some people, the impact of this pandemic is going to be here for, you know, months, if not years. So we need to try and support our community in those areas, you know, as much as we can.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Oh, it's fantastic to hear that. Thanks so much to coming on, Matt. And I will say, downstairs from the Anfield Rap Studio, there is a bar, so maybe next time we'll be able to do it from there.
Well, that sounds very promising. Thanks, Joel.
And we're doing the last fan standing quiz. We do this every week, and it's good fun, and it's a chance to get involved with the subscribers, but also to promote Last Fan Standing, which is an app on your phone, and it's a quiz app, and it tests your knowledge of LFC. And if you're lucky, you'll get one of me and or Neil Atkinson doing the quizzes for you. So you do predictor ones around the games, and also in terms of a nightstand, there's other quizzes you can play sort of just for fun as well. So it's completely free. We'd like you to get involved and support them. The good people are trying to have a go. And so it's Last Fan Standing. It's available on iPhone and Android, and download it and get involved. And as I say, we'll be doing predictor quizzes ahead of Wolves. Well, for Wolves, it goes 3 hours, live 3 hours before kickoff. And yeah, it should be good fun. Get involved in that. So to do a live example, I've got Cody Johansson. I made a mess of that. Sorry, mate. We practiced and everything. Yeah. I've got Cody, who is on and is going to help me play. So, Cody, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It's great.
It's nice to get someone on after the win, to be honest with you. Like, past few of these, it's been like, oh, so, yeah, we got beat again. But life's good. We're all smiling. It's nice.
Yeah, sun is shining. People are nicer to each other these days. It's a lot better. A lot better.
How's life anyway, mate? Where are you? I didn't actually ask before we joined. So whereabouts in the world are you?
I live in St. John, New Brunswick. So east coast of Canada. Yeah, so it's pretty good. Snow's melting, sun's out, so it's better than, you know, shoveling snow every day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we'll get going. So we've got, there's 10 for you to get, but with the Last Fan Standing, how it works is as soon as you get one wrong, you are out, you are eliminated. And so with that, so we're going to play Last Fan Standing rules. So it could be very short, or we could be here for a long time. We shall see. It's already a long show, I'll be honest with you, Cody. But so we'll see how we go. So question one is, who had a UK number one hit with the Reds anthem, You'll Never Walk Alone? Was it the Beatles, Jerry and the Pacemakers, or Freddie and the Dreamers?
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Correct. Led by Toxic of Legend, Jerry Marsden, who obviously very sadly passed away at the beginning of the year. So we're off and running. So Reds goalkeeper Alisson is left-footed or right-footed?
Right-footed.
He is, yeah. I had to think there as well. You're like, which one does he boom it off the pitch with? He is right-footed, correct. Liverpool bought another Brazilian star, Fabinho, from which club? Was it PSG, Monaco, or Lyon?
Monaco.
It was, correct. You're flying here, mate. Very good. Number four, who was the only Liverpool player to win the Ballon d'Or? Was it Michael Owen, Kenny Dalglish, or Steven Gerrard?
Michael Owen.
It was, correct. He won it in 2001. Keegan won it, but after he left Liverpool when he went to Hamburg. Apparently, Dalglish came second, it says here, in 1983, and Gerrard third in 2005. Oh, who beat Stevie in 2005? Yeah, I'm going to laugh. Anyway, some bum. He was not as good as Steven Gerrard. Enough about my Steven loving. There's been a lot of that recently, watching videos of him talking on loop. Which national side does Naby Keita play for? Guinea, Nigeria, or Senegal?
Guinea.
He is from Guinea. Number six, which manager signed Jordan Henderson to Liverpool? Kenny Dalglish, Brendan Rodgers, or Roy Hodgson?
Kenny Dalglish.
It was. I'll give you an exclusive now, Cody, as well, because you're doing so well. We're doing a special on Jordan Henderson because he's such an amazing fella. And the man who signed him may or may not be involved. So that's something to look forward to. It's coming out in the next few weeks, and that's fucking mad 3 week gap we've got with no games. So there you are.
I mean if Kenny's involved, then I imagine Josh Sexton's involved as well. Kenny loves him.
Yes, he is. They are close personal friends, as everyone knows. And yeah, so me and Josh spoke to Kenny about Jordan Henderson, but that is just one of many interviews documenting the career and life of Jordan. So something for everyone to look forward to, and a really good reason to subscribe. I say that, we might put it out for free. But it was anyway, I digress. Number seven, in the 1920 season, the Reds equaled the record for the most victories in a Premier League season. But how many games did they win? 30, 31, or 32?
Oh, okay. Oh, 30?
It was 32. I'm sorry, mate, but six is a good effort. Yeah, they beat Newcastle last game of the season, so they matched Man City's record. But yeah, there we go, 32. I think you did well there, mate. Six is more than respectable.
Yeah, no, I really wanted to get the 10, but, you know, that's what it is.
It is what it is. But no, thanks a lot for playing. Thanks for coming on. I'm really nice to meet you, mates, as well.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It's been great.
And it's John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by a friend of the show now, Craig Parkinson. Craig, thanks for coming back on.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
I want to talk to you about podcast more this time. We were talking about a couple of things you were doing around Netflix last time you were on, but I want to talk to you about podcasts because there's a lot going on in that part of your life. First of all, Two Shot is your baby. Yeah. I think it is fair to say. For those who don't know, Two Shot Pod is you speaking to, I would say, artists about their art, which sounds, you know, a little bit vague. But it's, you know, you're obviously a trained actor, and a lot of the people you have on are people you've worked with over the years. But it's wider than that, isn't it?
It's, well, yeah, I mean, it started off, you know, because I was quite nervous about starting to be sort of me, because I'd always hid behind characters, and actors tend not to like to sort of come on and be themselves. You know, the worst part of the job is promoting a television show or a film, because you have to go on like This Morning and be yourself, and it's like, it's cripplingly embarrassing. So I had to sort of learn how to do that. So I thought, well, I'll start off by talking to people I know and actors, but not necessarily, I knew I didn't want it to be anecdotal and be about, you know, quote unquote, the business, because that's just so naff. And so I just wanted to talk about their life and their struggles, or, you know, their success and failures, and just have a really, really, hopefully funny, intelligent, insightful conversation that you don't get on television anymore, because people just come on, they're given sort of 7 or 12 minutes to promote whatever they're promoting. And it's very surface level chat. Yeah. I want to sort of go a bit old school and dig a little bit deeper, you know, like, and not like it, but sort of, you know, like the old sort of Parkinson format.
Yeah.
Without any sort of sexism. So, if anybody's seen Parky interview Helen Mirren, then they should definitely look it up, because it's fucking excruciating. It's absolutely awful the way he objectifies her, and she completely holds her own. It's a brilliant slash awful bit of television.
Was it Meg Ryan he wasn't great with as well?
Yeah. She got a lot of kickback for that. But if you go back to it, it's him that's in the wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sure if we went, everybody sort of praises him for his long form interviews and friendship with Billy Connolly, and, you know, in the latter years, Peter Kay. But if the way he objectifies and discusses women is abhorrent, it's awful. Yeah.
But anyway, enough about slaughter party. So how have you found it during lockdown then? Because obviously the podcast has been going a number of years now. You obviously carried on. How have you found it?
Awful. If I'm honest, it took me, I took a little break for a while just to sort of restructure it, really, because I'm so used to sitting down with someone face to face, and as you will know by now, yes, this is completely different. So I found it sort of alienating in a way that I couldn't, I had to learn how to reconnect with somebody doing this. And I did a couple, and I didn't put them out because I wasn't happy with them. And as anybody will tell you, listens, you know, I always want them to be the best they can be. And if they're not, then they ain't going out, because that comes back on me as like an interviewer. And I always want the quality of the episodes to be the best they can be. But I've slowly sort of succumbed to it, because what else can you do, really?
Yeah.
can't be with each other. So this is that we're just sort of making the best of a bad situation. But I'm getting used to it. I don't necessarily like it any better, but I'm getting used to it, and I think I'm getting better as an interviewer for it. But God, I can't wait to get back and, you know, have a cup of tea and a slice of cake with somebody.
Me and you both. It is much nicer, much nicer. I really enjoyed it.
Same, John.
Yeah, I found it very similar to you, in that I feel like I've got better at it, and I feel one on one is a little bit easier than doing sort of group stuff. I find group stuff really, like, you're just like kind of like jumping in on each other. I mean, we did a little bit there, which sort of wouldn't have happened if you were sort of together. And but I found there have been some positives, and we've probably got a few people who we wouldn't have got otherwise. And you might have found that. So you've got Nicole Kidman, who's a huge star. Would that have been trickier, do you think, doing in person? Arranging, you mean?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was very lucky because it's got to a point now where people come to me. Yeah. I don't really go to them, and her team, for some bizarre reason, came to me. And whenever it's very sort of huge names like that, I say the same that I say to everybody, because they always say, oh, we can do 20 minutes. I go, that's no good to me.
Yeah.
And in a grand way, it's just like, I can't, that's not the type of conversation I can structure around, because I like to talk quite a lot. And I want my guests to sort of feel comfortable. And it takes 15 or 20 minutes to bed in and settle down.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, the bare minimum I can do is like 50 minutes. And I tend not to talk about work. I don't like people promoting stuff. It's all about their personal life. And if they're not happy with that, then this isn't the sort of show for you. And not in a rude way, just in a very, just breaking it down and being very, very honest. Half expecting her team to go, oh, yeah, she won't talk about that. And she won't.
Yeah, yeah.
15, 20 minutes. And she went, oh, yeah, she's listened to a couple of episodes, actually, and she's really into it. So... And I went, wow, okay, so this is happening. And then the night before, I started getting really nervous. Because I'd stupidly read an interview with her the week before that was published in the New York Times. And it was quite a spiky interview, not from her side, it was from the interviewer's side. He kept prodding and poking her. And I thought, God, what if she thinks I'm going to be doing that? Or she's had a bad day, or, you know, you don't know the structure of someone's day. What if the kids haven't been sleeping? What if she had an argument with her partner and she comes to this with an air? And she was so lovely and so funny. And if anybody's listened to it, they'll know it was just really open, and we delve deep, and I was really, really proud of it. And yeah, she's lovely.
No, it really came across, and I thought she was great, and I thought you both sort of bonded really quickly, and it was a really sort of nice interview. I am intrigued which one she listened to. I don't know if you found out.
I didn't ask her. I mean, maybe she went double Joe Gilgan and thought, oh, this is kind of crazy. This is good. Who knows?
Who knows? Another one I wanted to talk to you about was the one you did most recently. I think it's the most recent one. I was hearing one, the most recent one I've listened to, which was with Roy, which was really interesting for me because I've known PJ, and I'm sure he won't mind me using his real name for quite a long time. Three more music stuff, to be honest with you. It is Violet Nights that you guys talk about are fantastic, and I would encourage anyone you know who lives in the area to attend those once they're back up and running. What made you want to talk to Roy then? Because he's not particularly hugely well known outside the city, but he's obviously got a fascinating story and is a very talented guy. I mean, I suppose I've sort of answered your question there, but I'll let you do it.
I've always said from the word go, you know, I don't, there'll be some names that you know and there'll be some names that you don't know, but I'll hopefully draw out some sort of fascinating story, life story from them, you know, because I just want. I don't want to section the audience off and go, oh, we just talk to actors. You know, as you know, we talk to chefs and poets and musicians and writers and who have you. But it's just about the story. And me and Roy had connected on social media, and he sent me sort of clips and videos of his Violet Nights sort of over the years. So we've always had an open dialogue. And then when his little book of short stories came out. He sent me a copy just because he knew that I'd be interested, and I was, and I really loved it. And then I thought, well, I think now's the right time for you to come on if you fancy. And he's always been a big supporter of the podcast, so he knew what he was getting into.
Yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't have been more proud of the episode, to be honest, because since that episode came out, I've been getting messages and emails how it's kind of helped people, really. And he texts me sort of every other day, and he texted me last night actually copying in certain messages that he's had, and he says he gets them on a daily basis from people. And it's, you know, we don't start out a conversation, you know, in any sort of moral way to say, oh, we really want to help people. It's not about that. It's just about someone sharing their story And if it touches or affects anybody, then that's great. But for some people, it'll just be, wow, what a fascinating tale and what an incredible man. And it'll just open the door on his work a bit.
Yeah.
And I think he's such an open book and such a talented guy that more people, you know, who aren't in the Northwest or, you know, specifically Liverpool should know about him, really.
Absolutely. And it was because as I say, I've known PJ for a number of years, you know, not hugely well, but we've done things together and he's been, you know, supportive of the band I manage and things like that. And, you know, but just hearing, you know, his story, and it's funny because we grew up in the same city, but we couldn't have had, you know, more kind of different, you know, lives, you know what I mean? In terms of, you know, the stuff he's talking about as if it's normal, like every person on his street either having an addict or supporting a drug addict is just sort of almost another world. But for him, it's like, well, that's sort of what I knew, really. But he's been able to kind of in later life realize that what a sort of a profound impact being a child in that sort of scenario kind of has, really.
Yeah, I mean, I knew a little bit about his past, but I didn't know anything to that extent. So when he was going there, you have to be very sensitive with the conversation. That's why doing things in person and, you know, delving deep into people's lives is so much easier when you're in front of that person, because you can read their body language and you can see in a flicker of their eye, you know, I've learned, are we going to go down here? Do you feel comfortable going down this path or not? So to do it over the internet was always tricky. But yeah, I mean, as you heard, he was very, very much open to it. But I do want to sort of always protect my guests. And that's why I always give them full editorial control over the episode once it's done. You know, we cut it together and then send it back. And if they've got any edits, we'll snip it out. Do you know what I mean?
But it was also, you know, I don't want people to think that it was, you know, it's a dark kind of episode, because it's very inspirational, I found. And obviously later on when he talks about what he's doing now, but also just the idea of, you know, when you said, oh, when did you start writing? He was like, oh, when I was 30. And that's an amazing thing. Again, for someone like me who was very much encouraged to be creative from an early age, and I was doing, you know, bits of theatre and music from about 10, really. And that wasn't because my parents wanted me to be an actor or a musician necessarily. They just thought it'd be a good thing for a young person to do. And he's obviously not had that. And he talks about the peer pressure of people thinking a bit weird and if you do sort of certain things. But for him to, I hope someone listens to that who's in the 30s and has always, you know, wanted to say, get up on stage and do absolutely anything, is inspired to do so, you know, by Roy's story. And that would be an amazing thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, even though, you know, it does touch on dark times. And I had to say, you know, in the intro that, there, you know, for trigger warnings, there are, you know, we talk about, you know, addiction and suicide and all that, but I think you're right. I think the overall outcome of that episode is hope. And there's lots of hope and inspiration in the episode. But yeah, it would be incredible if someone went, I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah.
What? Fuck it. I'm going to give it a go. Because at the end of the day, I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely. It's the Two Shot Pod, if that wasn't clear. Do have a listen to the Roy episode. He's a brilliant man, PJ. I really, really like him. I've got a huge amount of time for him. And I'm glad to sort of Craig, you know, you sort of feels the same. It's always nice when nice people from different parts of your life come together. Yeah. It's always quite a nice thing.
You know, I mean, I try and use social media in a kind way and you know, from a very much of a business point of view, because, you know, as anybody knows on there, it can be quite a toxic place.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, it's, you're screaming into the void if you try and have an argument on social media. So I've been really lucky with the you know, the caliber and quality of guests that I've had, because sometimes as much as I don't go on it, I wouldn't be anywhere without it, to be honest. It's been really wonderful.
Yeah, same, for good and bad. So yeah, do delve into that, everyone, and obviously you've got years of back catalogue to explore. If you haven't got there, you lucky people. Just before you go, Craig, I want to talk to you about another podcast you're doing, which is around Line of Duty. People listening to this will probably know that you were sort of in Line of Duty. I think for 3 or 4 series. I'm not gonna give anything away. To be honest, I was thinking about this before, and I know some people are discovering it for the first time now. It's coming back on the screens. There's Series 6 is coming out at the end of March, but I know BBC are showing it at the moment, so we don't want to give too much away about sort of your character. But what I'll say is, even though you're not in the new series, you've been asked to host a podcast about Line of Duty, and it was funny because I saw your tweets about it, and you were saying, "Oh yeah, thrilled to be asked and stuff like that," but to be honest, if they hadn't have asked you, host of a award-winning podcast and all that, and they'd have asked Mickey McClure, you'd have been pissed off, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't. No. I was really thrilled. I mean, usually I'm kind of reticent about, me as a host of a podcast and my acting work sort of coming side by side. I find it slightly icky, I suppose. But I think because I've had time away from the series, but even though I'm still connected to the series in a very strong way, it seemed now that the time was right to do it in conjunction with season 6. And as anybody knows who's listens to, you know, Two Shot, I do like a chat. The worrying thing for me is that I've got to reformat how I approach interviewing into a 30-35 minute segment, because, you know, that's all the time I've got. And plus we've got to talk and dissect episode by episode, which are, you know, roughly an hour long. So God knows how it's going to be. I mean, you know, they might be running over by some concern.
Are you looking forward to watching it just as a fan, though? I mean, we've talked about the quality of acting on it already. You know, last time you were on, it's a phenomenally talented cast. And you must just be looking forward to sitting down along with everyone else when it's on and just, having a beer and enjoying it.
Yeah, I am. I'm really excited to see where it goes. Because I don't know, because I've tried to stay away and I haven't, even though I'm still in, you know, very much in touch with everyone. I don't want to know anything because I want to be as surprised as anybody. But luckily, I get to watch the full series before the rest of the UK, because they're going to send me all the links. So I have to pre-record before the episode airs. So the podcast episode will go out directly after episode 1 airs in the UK. So I've just got to get ahead of the game a bit. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, as is ever. And I think we all need a bit of tension because we haven't had enough tension.
Yeah, everyone look forward to a bit more anxiety in our lives. Yeah. Listen, great, good luck with the pod, mate. And yeah, nice one again for the stuff you do with Two Shot. It's been brilliant. And I know a lot of people are enjoying it. And so cheers for sort of carrying on with it. And yeah, best of luck with everything, mate.
You too, my friend. Take care.
And it's Lizzie Doyle for The Weekender, and I'm joined by Jackie Oatley, who you know is a big Wolves fan, and she hosts the podcast for The Athletic, The Molyneux View. Jackie, thanks so much for coming on. Just a quick preview then ahead to the game. A bit of the thoughts from your side, from the Wolves side. Obviously, Liverpool are going in terrible form, but have had a really good win in the Champions League. How are you feeling going into this match? Because obviously Wolves have been quite inconsistent this season, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been a very difficult season from a Wolves perspective. I mean, they've been spoiled under Nuno, winning the championship in the first year, finishing 7th and getting into Europe and reaching the FA Cup semi-final in the second year and then finishing 7th again. It's been nothing but positive, really. Until this season, they came into it off the back of a 59-game season last year without any pre-season. And really the problem stemmed from the fact that they didn't strengthen particularly well in the summer. They sold Diogo Jota, as you well know, on purpose. It wasn't we couldn't keep him. But they were happy to let him go because they had Pedro Neto waiting in the wings, and that's worked out fine. The Matt Doherty replacement, Nelson Semedo, hasn't borne fruit as yet because of the relationship that Doherty had with Adama Traore. He's not been replicated yet. And they didn't have senior backup to Raul Jimenez. And that really was key because he fractured his skull on November the 29th. And do you know what? In all the time between November the 29th and now, they have had one goal scored from open play by a striker. Wow. And that's Fabio Silva, who had only ever started one league game and scored one league goal before making a £35 million move in the summer. So he's 18 years of age. So they didn't have backup striking options. And that's really cost them. And now they've got Willian Jose, who's a 29-year-old centre forward on loan from Real Sociedad, who has lots of qualities, but we haven't really seen them yet. Apart from his hold-up play, which is decent, he's not scored yet. He doesn't seem to be that mobile. He's not linking up well with Traore and Neto. So he might not even start. It could be Fabio Silva who starts, because he's been coming off the bench, putting himself around a lot. And, you know, he's just, his work rate is phenomenal, but he doesn't have the experience or the finishing power that, or the heading ability that Willian Jose has, except we haven't seen it yet for Willian Jose. So that's a dilemma for Nuno. He could do what he did against Man City and just start both Neto and Traore up front, but really they need to have that focal point for the way they play. And the frustration amongst Wolves fans at the moment, it's a recurring theme, and we're trying to change the record on the Molyneux View podcast, because every week it's a case of why on earth do Wolves start so slowly in first halves of games? I mean, really for the last couple of years, you have to say, but it's been more noticeable this season because they don't have the quality and they don't have Jimenez that they have previously. The first halves are just so slow, so lackluster. They're back in their five and they're not really springing forward with the pace that we used to see with the likes of Jimenez and Jota combining. They were devastating on the counter-attack. Now they play on the counter-attack, but they're not remotely devastating. And they've got Neves and the very aging Moutinho in the two midfield roles. And they just need a lot more athleticism in that Moutinho role. So we're hoping, from Wolves' perspective, Willy Bolly will be back to take the right-sided centre-half role of the back three, hoping that Dendonka will go into midfield in place of Moutinho, because he has a lot more energy, can get around the field. He can't score a goal, hasn't done since last July, but he gets into those positions and can be more of a threat. So that's the hope.
Yeah, so I think Wolves have gone a little bit under the radar with everything that's also gone against them this season. Obviously, something that's happened to Raul Jimenez is unprecedented. Like you say, you've lost Diogo Jota, but you've got a brilliant player in Pedro Neto there, like you said, who's top scorer. They've won two of the last five games, but they've only taken 2 points from the last three. Obviously, Liverpool are going in on a dip. How do you see this game going in terms of, are you positive that you can get something out of it?
Well, I tend to be glass half full, but do you know what I equate it to, Lizzie? It's shoe amnesia. Do you have shoe amnesia? Do you have shoes in your cupboard that you have worn on nights out and you've been crippled in pain at how much it hurts you, and you're like, I'm never going to wear them again, they are evil. And then you put them back in your wardrobe, and then a few months later, you're like, oh, those shoes are going perfectly with this outfit. You try them on, you go, yeah, I can walk in them. And then you have another night of torture. It's a bit like that being a Wolves supporter, because every single first half, pretty much bar none, is horrendous. And they're just awful to watch, slow, boring, monotonous. And the whole country at halftime, as every match is televised, goes, what on earth has happened to Wolves? They used to be fun to watch and now they're not. And then in the second half, Wolves will pick it up. So I think I am optimistic in that regard, because I'll have forgotten about the first half thing by the time kickoff comes. And I'll be hopeful that they'll be a bit more positive. But I think what they'll probably do is what they usually do, which is probably sit back a bit, try to soak up pressure and try to catch Liverpool on the counter-attack. There is an argument to say that they should really be a bit more positive from the off, because Liverpool have so much pressure on them because of those six successive home defeats. But Liverpool have won three of the last four away, so there shouldn't be an expectation that they'll come to Molyneux and won't expect too much. So I think, knowing them as I do, I think they will try to be a bit more positive. They will sit back and they will try and counter, but it's how they do it that matters, which is more accurate passing, midfielders supporting the wingers Neto and Traore and helping them to get up the pitch along with the wing backs. That's absolutely key. Whereas previously, in the last few games, Neto and Traore have got the ball, they have to try and beat three men themselves, and then they look up and there's nobody there supporting them, and that's been a big issue. So I think, don't expect too much from Wolves aesthetically in the first half, and then they'll look to try and win it maybe in the last half hour or so, or at least score or equalise in the last half hour. I think realistically, maybe the best that Wolves can hope for is probably a point and a one-all draw. But if I was Liverpool, I would be going there pretty confidently, because Wolves' confidence is quite low at the moment and they're really under strength. That could change if Boly comes back in and Ndonka, say, goes into midfield. But at least you don't have to worry about Wolves strikers scoring, because that just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Adama Traore hasn't had a goal or an assist in the Premier League this season. He hasn't scored in the league since December 2019, which is absolutely extraordinary. But there is pressure on him to try and make a difference there. And he does do a little bit better against some of the bigger clubs. He got three against Man City last season, for example. So he is capable. It's maybe a confidence issue. But it's certainly an intriguing match, absolutely.
And I mean, just quickly to finish off, it's a return for Diogo Jota. If there was a full stadium, how do you think the Wolves fans would have received him? And obviously, it's a little bit unlucky that he's been out for this much time for Liverpool, and it just so happens that he's right back in time for the Wolves game.
Yeah, funny that. Funny how these things pan out, isn't it? Well, yeah, I mean, from Wolves fans' perspective, they love Diogo Jota. He was on the bench when he was sold. He wasn't a key man in the starting lineup. There was a feeling that perhaps he'd gone a little bit stale there. So it's not as if they'd sold their star striker, or it wasn't seen as that. And it was such good money that they were offered that it was seen as a good deal. And so they were not happy to see him go, but they wished him well. That's what I'd say. And then, of course, he started so brilliantly at Liverpool, scored so many goals, and Wolves were stuttering and they were like, what have we done, with the fans say. But to answer your question about the fans, if there was a full house, it would be nothing but love and support for Diogo Jota. It's not as if he was handing in transfer requests and banging the door down. It wasn't like that at all. So they would have a huge amount of respect for him, but they would just be praying he didn't score, particularly as Wolves are finding goals so hard to come by at the moment. But yeah, there is an air of inevitability about it. And Wolves fans, being the kind of generally glass half empty, kind of down on our luck kind of characters from the Black Country, I don't think you'll find a Wolves fan that doesn't expect Diogo Jota to score at least one goal, probably a hat trick, as he tended to score for us in his little bursts of goal scoring runs that he had for us.
Well, listen, if you can hear now, you're hearing that Wolves fans expect Diogo Jota to score. So let's hope, as Liverpool fans, that we're all hoping for a Diogo Jota hat-trick as well. Jackie, yeah. Thanks so much for joining us on the show. And back over to the Weekender.
Hope you've enjoyed that. Lots of lovely people speaking about lovely things. But we're back with other lovely people, Amelia Bonner, Carl Kopak and Mike Kearney. And to look ahead to Monday night's game, and Mike, it'd be lovely to get a winner before this big break. Obviously, you know, with the Champions League victory, you know, hopefully sort of spurring them on. And, you know, there's a few weeks off. It'd be really nice to go into that with back-to-back wins.
Yeah, I think Salah says yesterday after the game now.
Was this just you know, or was this like...
it might have been. I can't remember. I'll have to check my WhatsApp. But he definitely did say, look, we need to get it going again, hopefully, in the Premier League. So I think it'd be important to them now that, you know, look, although that may have gone in terms of lifting the thing, you know, it's momentum in terms of the other games now. And you probably be like a boxer off a training camp who, like, gets really unfit but then has to get fit again to box. You need to stay in sort of rhythm, don't you? And Klopp always talks about the rhythm, so I think that team will probably, it wouldn't surprise me if that team starts again, actually. But it's now nice to be able to say that you could drop Naby or Curtis in for one of the midfielders and give them a rest if needs be. But you know, we've got a big break now till Arsenal. There's not many going on international duty, is there? So you know, because of the restrictions and stuff like that. So the Brazilian lads will be staying. You'd imagine he'd say, I have a week off and then we've got 2 weeks of training. I think, look, Wolves is a perfect sort of game for us there, where they'll think, okay, well, they've got the win, but we can have a go at them. And you know, the confidence that we should take from that, like RB Leipzig are a really good team. So we should be flying into Wolves now. And, you know, another couple of goals would be nice, you know, be really, really nice if we could win 2-0, but just a win again, just to keep this rolling and get a bit of momentum going down the hill towards number seven.
Down the hill to number seven, tell you what, that got me going. Like a Nat Phillips montage. Amelia, it's 5 days gap, which is a nice little rest for them as well. So if he chooses to, he should be able to ask the lads to go again. And I imagine he will, because they'll be feeling pumped up. The front three, I thought, played really well together the other night. And so the idea of seeing more of them gel and getting to know each other a little bit more as a unit, I think it would be good. The midfield had a lovely balance to it the other than last night, and expecting to go again, and obviously it's the best centre back partnership in the world, so I think he will ask them to go again. And I think the gap, the fact that it's 5 days rather than 3 or 4, gives them an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, the gap is brilliant, and you can't kind of underestimate that when you think we've had other periods where we've been playing something insane, like five games in 15 days, which is just superhuman and ridiculous and too much, and as mentally exhausting as I imagine it is physically exhausting, which, you know, contributes to it. But so to be slightly less positive than Mike, my only fear is when Mike said at the start, with that Champions League performance, there was something to play for, and it's, if you're out of this, then it's gone. You know, realistically, you might not win anything this season, which is devastating after two consecutive seasons where they have been godlike heroes that have been paraded through the streets. And I think that the difficulty is kind of knowing where we're at with the league. I wonder how much harder it is to kind of, to give that performance again and to do that when there isn't that kind of jeopardy of, if you don't do this, you're getting booted out and there's nothing to win with it. And I think that's the only thing that worries me. But then equally, obviously, they're not just going to kind of sack it off, and they want to give their best performances. And as Mike said, it's not just to do with the end goal necessarily. It's to do with the momentum, the performance, building back to a place where hopefully next season we go and do it again. And I think the players that have come back, having Fabinho back, having Jota, they're looking incredibly threatening and brilliant, is, you know, it's invaluable, and it's going to make a world of difference, and we'll get to see that in the league. And Wolves are a good side for it, because I think they will challenge us and they'll push us, and maybe that's the thing that'll make them go, right, come on then, let's have this, let's get a couple of goals and let's show what we can do in the league now that we've had this kind of reboost. I hope so anyway.
Maybe the secret, Carl, is to create a bit more edge around these games. So one example could be that we drive to Wolves, but if they lose, they have to walk back. Let them know, the coach. That's just one idea, you know. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know if you've got any others.
You suggested the Hunger Games at Wolves.
Listen, I'm in the movie business now, so that's
what I was going to say. Yeah. You've got elevator pitches all over the place at the moment. I'm loving this. Yeah, you've got to jog back. You've got to head your way back to Liverpool after the game.
I mean, it's one option. I mean, hopefully it's not necessary, what I'm saying. But you know. They should be up for it, surely.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, well, Diogo Jota's going to be, isn't he? Because he's back in the ground. I'm just stealing your ideas. It's the Diogo Jota story. It's the latest chapter in that, where he gets a hat-trick there, and no one boos him because there's no one in the ground, which is quite handy. I'm quite happy with that. He can put his shirt over his head.
I love it, Nuno did.
It's easier to disrespect the fans when none of them are fucking there. Do you know what I mean? And ask about your loyalties.
It's been a moon all four start sides are more than you. I think Diogo's got a lot to offer for this game as well, because he was really good last night, just missed one tiny ingredient out of everything. But it doesn't look like he's been injured. And I think if there's one game he's going to be, you know, absolutely champing at the bit to get to, it's going to be Wolves away. It's gutted he can't go. It's one of my favourite aways. I love Wolves away. But always rains, or it's always cold, one or the other. I think there's a lot to what Mike said as well, and his mate Jürgen as well, that it is all about momentum now and carrying on what we've got. And I just want us to play freely rather than, you know, panicking, like, which is what we've done for the past 5 games or so, of like thinking, oh my God, what happens if this happens? Whereas, you know, against Leipzig, we were more sort of like, well, this is up to you now, but we're going to do this. So it's a hard place to go. They're very good at sitting deep, and they're very good at staying there, not coming out, basically, and just trying, you know, find a way around them. But if we play anything like we did against Leipzig, should be okay.
This should be okay. Okay, I'll ask you for a bit of a prediction, but you can go as wide as you want in this. It's an open question of what you think will happen in the game. Mike?
I do fancy Jota to score, you know. I think that's all he was missing tonight. And I suppose you could say it was his second start, his third appearance since his injury. But I think I'm on for him scoring. I just think we'll win. I don't know. I'd like to see the clean sheet as well. I suppose that's like being, you know, as long as we win and there's a bit of momentum and all, and you see all the good stuff that we've seen last night again. So it, like we, there's actual tangible evidence that we are stringing this together now over a couple of games. I'll be happy with that. 2-3-1 win for the Reds and a Diogo Jota goal.
2-3-1 win. That was hard for me to say there. Well done on nailing it first time, Mike. I made a complete mess of it. But Amelia, what do you think will happen on Monday night?
Right, so in Wolverhampton
or wider?
I've not got my crystal ball, but there's a little bit of me, if I'm being completely honest, that is worried that I'm going to be disappointed again because, you know, it's always there in your head, isn't it? The little naggy voice, but we're not listening to the little naggy voice.
Oh, Steve. With...
oh, love it. We're moving house on Wolves Day, so you'll be lucky if we actually get a tally to watch it. But I think the little naggy voice is only tiny, and there's a bigger bit of me that thinks it'll be 3-1 and Diogo Jota will score two, because he's brilliant and we've seen him score like 15 in a game before, so... which is only a slight exaggeration. And I think, yeah, being back at Wolves will be a big thing. And they're buoyed by that result and they're probably feeling brilliant and they've got to go on a plane, which is really exciting. So I'd imagine that they'll be feeling great. And I hope, yeah, I hope it's 3-1, two of them by Diogo, one by Sadio Mane. And then Wolves can have a little something to make them feel better about themselves.
Maybe they should fly to Wolves. That is an option available to them.
Just go up and stick around for a bit and then drop down again.
Yeah. Fly from Liverpool to Manchester and then get the bus. Carl, what do you think will happen on Monday night? I mean, probably not that.
I'm going to go 2-0. I'd love to say Nat Phillips headed penalty. But fly and dive and header penalty. I think I'm going to go 2-0, one early, one late, and I think Jota's going to score one, possibly two.
All sexy stuff, all sounds amazing, all sounds like a wonderful Monday night. We're happy, hopefully you are as well. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. I went a little bit longer this time because I want to give you a bit of extra content so you can get your teeth stuck into waiting until Monday night. And we can't wait for it to come now. That's the beauty of a win. But thanks a lot to Amelia, to Carl, to Mike and Lizzie for producing. Up the Reds, have a beautiful weekend. Sports Social Podcast Network.